Well, you know it's a busy show when we split it into two parts, which is, of course, normally the Bulls beat treatment. Again, around the American on Wednesdays and Fridays, with not much going on during the week. It's just sort of tucked away at the end of the hour after a couple of airings of Bulls beat. But on Monday, it's its own separate entity, and it's been a 15-minute entity. And today, I just decided we might do this for the entire football season to go a little bit beyond 15 minutes. So this first block will be football, and then we'll give you what happened in soccer and volleyball, with conference play actually underway in every sport now. There was just one conference matchup in football, but it began for volleyball, and it's been underway for soccer. So full details on all of the above. We'll give you players of the week and the like. Let's start off with football. And as I mentioned, conference play began. We'll get to Houston and Navy in a second. But first, we got to start off with the team that the Bulls are going up against. And we'll discuss SMU much more throughout the course of the week on Bulls beat. But wow, might be the hottest team in the conference right now. And that includes Cincinnati. I know the Bearcats have been good, but not great. They get Notre Dame this week in a big one. But SMU has been great, especially on offense. They have the kid who happens to lead the country in touchdown passes, Tanner Mordecai, added 4 to that total, giving him 20 for the season. And the Mustangs retain the Iron Skillet in their matchup with their Dallas-Fort Worth rival TCU, played it in Fort Worth. 42-34, the Horned Frogs came into this one undefeated. SMU put up 29 first downs on offense and 595 yards. And they were in the end zone less than a minute in, 68 yards from Mordecai to Danny Gray. TCU would actually take the lead in this one, 21-14 early in the second quarter, but 7 plays, 75 yards, and a 29-yard touchdown pass from Mordecai to Reggie Roberson later, it was tied at the half. But also have to mention that Tanner Mordecai was intercepted twice in that second quarter. The first time TCU missed a field goal, and the second time was with the score tied 21, and fourth down and goal at the 3. You kick a field goal going into halftime, right, to take the lead? No. They went for it and an interception. Again, he was intercepted late in the third quarter, but they held TCU to 3 yards on 3 plays. And this was when SMU had taken an 11-point lead, so they were able to keep that lead at 35-27. In and around the interceptions, SMU also got early in the third quarter a sack-forced fumble recovering at the 3-yard line of the Horned Frogs. That allowed them to break that halftime tie. Ulysses Bentley, the fourth, with a 153-yard day, scored the touchdown to go up 28-21. And then SMU would get its first 2-score lead on its next drive, 8 plays and 75 yards. Mordecai threw touchdown number 4 to Jordan Curley, making it 42-27 with 12 minutes to go. TCU would get it to within 8, and then impressively, again, this was in Fort Worth, against a team that's not used to giving up big yardage, the Mustangs took over the ball, only up 8 at their own 12-yard line, and they did not give it back. Faced 1 third down, and Mordecai scrambled for a 12-yard game with about a minute to go. That was the last play that was needed. They took a couple of knees and score a big time 42-34 victory. So yeah, the Mustangs are feeling pretty good about life coming into their home game against the Bulls this Saturday. Incidentally, I mentioned that big third down conversion. They were 8 of 12 in that category. Pretty tidy stuff for the Mustangs. Our first conference matchup took place at Houston after a rough start. Navy looked like it was in good shape, had the lead less than a minute in, and had a 17-7 lead at halftime, but did not score again until Houston had popped them for 3 touchdowns. Final score 28-20 Cougars. And if you probably know, if you're a college football fan, if you can control the triple option attack of Navy, you're probably going to win. Well, Navy did its thing. Second quarter was the dream Navy quarter. Had the ball for 12 of the 15 minutes. Had a field goal by Bijan Nichols that made it 10-7 midway through. Next drive went 11 plays, 89 yards, and ended with a 1-yard touchdown run with 52 seconds left of the half. So Navy thinks it's got this game won at 17-7, especially when you consider the only points on the other side were on a punt return. So Houston's offense did not do anything in the first half. Then in the third quarter, Navy's offense did not do anything. 0 yards. Tajon Henry would pull the Cougars within 17-14 with a touchdown run to complete a 43-yard drive. Then they would get it going to end the third quarter and take the lead on the first play of the fourth. 47-yard touchdown pass from Clayton Toon, back from injury, to Marcus Jones, the guy who had that punt return, made it 21-17. Then Navy, which again, 0 yards in the third quarter, chance to get it back going after falling behind in the fourth. They mishandle a snap. turn it over on their own 26-yard line, the midshipmen. Houston takes advantage with the five-play drive. Henry's second touchdown makes it 28-17. And even though Navy was able to march down the field for a six-minute drive, they had to settle for a field goal. Smart move to get it within 8, 28-20. Then they had a chance. They got the ball back. They took over at their own 20-yard line with 3 minutes left. First play went for 8 yards, but then they threw it on second down, sacked on third down, and all of a sudden it's 4th and 13 from the 17-yard line. They actually completed a pass, came 2 yards shy of the marker, and that's how Houston was able to win the game. So the Cougars improved to 3-1 on the season. Well, if they were auditioning for future inclusion in the American, both Texas, San Antonio, and UAB passed the audition, unfortunately at the expense of two current members of the conference, especially disappointing Memphis, because it looked like this was going to be a laugher. I was getting ready for the broadcast on Saturday, watching some college football, which was nice, on an afternoon, and glanced down and saw it was 21-0 Memphis against UTSA, and thinking, wow, that's great. I'm a little surprised, but that's great. Well, UTSA would win 31-28. Sincere McCormick, a running back for UTSA, had 42 carries. They kept feeding him even though they were behind 21-0, and it helped them out. Also helping out big time, a couple of Memphis fumbles. Granted, it was a fumble in the end zone early in the game by the Roadrunners that the awesomely named, I might add, Wardalis Ducksworth landed on, and that was the 7-0 lead. Then an 8-play, 62-yard drive. Memphis's Rodriguez Clark, former Tulane Green Wave, makes it 14-0. Then the great Calvin Austin III, a 60-yard touchdown pass, and it was 21-0. However, that was it for the scoring for Memphis in the first half. I mentioned McCormick, his first touchdown, a 12-yarder completed, a 12-play, 87-yard drive, but still 21-7 at the half, and then you get a stop to start the second half. And now your fine kicker, Joe Doyle, is lining up a 52-yarder that would have made it a three-score game. Again, it was missed. It was short. Texas San Antonio takes over with 8.5 minutes to go in the quarter, and they go on a long touchdown drive again, Sincere McCormick, and it's a 21-14 game. But no problem. Memphis answers. 7-play, 73-yard drive right down the field. 32-yard pass to Sean Dykes, who had a fantastic day, and it's 28-14, no problem. Except for San Antonio ends the third quarter with some momentum after a 47-yard pass, and they end up taking it into the end zone to make it 28-21, then fumbles, costly ones. On a sack, first of all, set up the Roadrunners at the Memphis 7-yard line. And after Sincere McCormick was stopped twice in deep, they call timeout, the Roadrunners, and they give it to him again on a 4th and goal, and he scores his 3rd touchdown, and the game is tied. Memphis reeling at this time, but 40-yard completion from the true freshman Seth Hennigan to Calvin Austin. They're at the UTSA 25. They hand it off to Brandon Thomas. He fumbles. Even though Texas San Antonio is long ways away from the end zone, that was a chance, obviously, for Memphis to take the lead. And even though Memphis got a stop on 4th and 1, tie game, they have it with 4.5 minutes to go. They can't do anything with it. They punt. They actually had a big holding call, so they had a punt on 4th and 19. Texas San Antonio takes over with 2:46 to go again in a tie game. They grind the clock out, even with Memphis calling timeouts, trying to maybe get the ball back if UTSA were to kick a field goal, but it didn't happen. The kicking the field goal part did on the last play of the game. 42-yarder and a stunning, difficult loss for Memphis. Also, team that a lot of people are saying could be in the conference, I'd be all for it, UAB. Well, does this sound familiar? Except this was in New Orleans. A 21-0 lead for UAB. And boy, Tulane tightened up the defense, but still fell 28-21. UAB, very impressive. 15 plays, 75 yards on the first drive of the game. Converted 1 3rd and 12 in there, but mostly 3rd and shorts. And then Tulane goes 3 and out, so not the optimal start. 4th and 11, they're punting on their second drive, the Blazers. Roughing the punter. Yeah, it was that kind of game. And all of a sudden, it's 14-0. On to the second quarter. Tulane mixes in a stop in there, but their offense just can't get it going. And on UAB's 4th drive, 10 plays, 75 yards, and it is 21-0. But UAB answers back, gets down to a 20-yard touchdown pass, Michael Pratt to Will Wallace, and at least they're in the game at that point, 21-7. And the next time they get the ball back with 2 minutes left on the clock, they get the job done. 11 plays, 79 yards, and they score with 6 seconds left on a first and goal pass into the end zone to Deuce Watts. So Tulane has all the mo after a wretched start heading into the third quarter. And they get the ball to start the third, and they go three and out. But they get an interception, so they've got it back for their second possession of the second half, 75 seconds in, and they only go backwards. They get stopped for an 11-yard loss, had to punt. Next drive, interception, and not in good shape. So UAB, meanwhile, gets to the Tulane 32-yard line. They're thinking about a field goal for a two-score lead, but the Green Wave come up with a sack. They get the ball back on their own 11, granted, and they go down the field all the way to the 19-yard line, a big 3rd and 10 completion, interception. So obviously they're going to lose this game. Whoa, wait. They get a stop on their next drive. They take over with 4:23 to go, and they score with about 2 minutes left. But in desperate straits, down 28-21, they need an onside kick, and that's never... Whoa, they get an onside kick recovery, just like against Oklahoma, except that time they were within 7 points. And as you know, the Sooners got the stop right around midfield. Tulane didn't even pick up a first down. Same thing this time. Tulane got to midfield, but a sack on their last chance, and that's how the Green Wave fell, 28-21. And three granted against weaker opposition, but three wins for the league. We'll tell you about them. Tulsa beat Arkansas State 41-34 after the visitors went up 14-7. Tulsa would score the next 24 points in this game, and they racked up the offense, the Golden Hurricane, 663 yards. Really kind of misleading. The final score sounds like it was an offensive shootout. There were only 3 points from each team in the fourth quarter, and the yardage, again, severely favored the Golden Hurricane, a 300-plus yard advantage. Arkansas State had a kickoff return in there. Both teams held to just a field goal in that fourth quarter, and Tulsa gets the win. Shamari Brooks, running back, great to see him back going, 155 yards. Davis Brim, 355 yards, and a career best with 3 touchdowns. East Carolina wins. Now, you could have predicted a letdown after their big 21-0 fourth quarter rally on the road against Marshall, but wow, was this a letdown. They win it 31-28, but they were behind 14-0. Charleston Southern was the opponent. Charleston Southern beat them in the fourth quarter 14-0 as well. Fortunately for East Carolina, there was this 24-0 second quarter, but you'd have to call that, even though it was a wonderful night in Greenville with 40,000 fans, an exciting game that really shouldn't have been that much of an exciting game. And really, the stats favored the opponent. I'd say 35-14 was the first down count in favor of East Carolina. They ran 41 more plays. That would be 100 plays to 59. But again, the Pirates took the lead in the second quarter and kind of just held on. Temple was down to Wagner 7-0 at home heading into the second quarter, but got things turned around, outscored them 17-0 in both the second and the third quarters, beating the now winless 0-4 Wagner Seahawks by the score of 41-7. Temple improves to 2-2 on the season. Players of the week in the conference mentioned Davis Brin for Tulsa, got him offensive honors with that career passing performance against Arkansas State. Defensive player, how about 12 tackles for junior linebacker for Houston, Derek Parrish. 2 of those tackles for a loss as Navy was limited, as we mentioned, to 64 yards in the second half. No third down conversions, 0-6. Houston leads the American in defense, allowing just 255 a game. Special teams honor, yeah, Marcus Jones, who had that punt return for a score, the only player in FBS with 2 punt returns for a touchdown this season. On the honor roll, East Carolina cornerback Jaquan McMillan, 10 tackles, including a big 23-yard interception return for a touchdown. Memphis linebacker J.J. Russell had 18 tackles to get on the honor roll. Sean Dykes, by the way, should mention, we talked about his big day, 6 catches for 167 yards. Calvin Austin, 6 for 142. Neither got honor roll mentioned, but yeah, those are nice numbers. SMU's duo of Ulysses Bentley running the ball for 153. And a touchdown, Danny Gray, receiver, 4 catches, 130, and a touchdown. Both get on the honor roll, as does Tulsa kicker Zach Long. 41 and 45-yard field goals made all his PATs against Arkansas State. Speaking of kicking, yeah, it's a part 2 coming up on Around the American Soccer and Volleyball as well. That's next. Stay tuned. And as we return here on Around the American, letting you know the weekly honors from earlier today and as far as how everything slots out through a couple weeks of soccer action and just one weekend, but a couple matches for everybody on the volleyball side of things. Let's start off with men's soccer, and there's already separation. It's pretty early. There's still, 80% of the slate. It's pretty symmetrical when it comes to men's soccer because there are just six teams that sponsor the sport in the conference, so it's 10 games. You play everybody twice each. And the Bulls have already played the two teams that have been ranked highly throughout the season. And they're playing the other team that's 2-0 next. That's the UCF Knights, who come to Tampa on Wednesday night. But along with the Bulls falling in Dallas to SMU 2-0 on Friday, UCF was turning it on in the second half to beat Temple. Tough team to score goals against. And yet the Knights broke them down for 3 goals in the second half. It was a close one at halftime, 4 shots apiece and 1 goal each. And then, obviously, UCF broke it open in impressive fashion, 4-1, the final score. So UCF now 2-0 in the conference, 4-3 overall. In each of their wins, they've scored at least 4 goals. It's hard to believe. The Knights began the season with a 4-0 home defeat to FIU. Their other two losses were both early on and on a trip to Raleigh, North Carolina, where the Wolfpack got him by that score along with Virginia Tech. So UCF is kind of on a roll right now. Tulsa still is from a record standpoint, but they got a test and they win at Memphis 1-0. First of all, if Memphis, which is picked last in the league and only has one win, is coming this close against the Golden Hurricane, it shows you how really great this conference is. But secondly, you look at the stats and you'll see that it was a 15-7 shot advantage. And on goal, it was 6-1. Well, just like in hockey, when you hit the post, it doesn't count as a shot at all. A shot on goal has to be getting a save, and Memphis hit the post and or the crossbar 3 times, and Tulsa's only goal was on a penalty kick. So, definitely Memphis could have gotten a result quite easily there. It's pretty clear, though, the way things are looking anyway, that UCF, SMU, Tulsa are going to finish top three in whatever order, and bottom three right now, Bulls, Memphis, and Temple. 4 teams make the conference tournament, so it doesn't take a genius. Basically, if you're the Bulls, you have to finish, or at least attempt to finish, above both Memphis and Temple. And of course, if you can finish in the top three, great, but just being realistic, that's the picture right now in the American Athletic Conference. Nick Taylor, a transfer from SMU, which is intriguing enough. The UCF player who leads the country in assists got his 7th, along with a goal against Temple, was the offensive player of the week. Cole Johnson, who stopped 3 Bulls shots in the second half of that win on Friday night, was the goalkeeper of the week. And Henry Sache, outstanding defensive player for Tulsa, was, the defensive player of the week. Actually, the bulk of the conference play, all the conference play really, except for the Bulls and Tulsa on the women's side, took place last Thursday night. We recapped it for you on Friday's show. But Houston did play on Friday night out of conference and kind of enjoyed itself against Arkansas Pine Bluff, a team that was 4-5, so they can beat you, but they can't beat Houston. And this tells you exactly how strong this top of the conference is. It's really going to be difficult to win the American this year as far as the women's soccer side of things goes. Houston is now 9-1-1. They had their senior night. They have home games left, but I think they knew what they were doing making this senior night as they scored an 8-1 victory against Arkansas Pine Bluff on Friday. A lot closer, but a nice win for Cincinnati against Murray State. They were able, the Bearcats, to shake off a late goal in regulation allowed and get it in overtime, double overtime, actually 2-1. Conference play resumes on the women's side on Thursday. Memphis and USF, the only 2-0 teams, but then again, SMU and Houston have only played one. And look at their overall records. Houston's 9-1-1. SMU is highly ranked 7-1. In fact, higher ranked than anybody right now. Memphis 8-1-1, and the Bulls 7-2-1. Cincy's sitting at 6-4-1. The rest of the teams are right around 500, including a good UCF team at 5-4. We even saw the team with the worst record, East Carolina, 4-7, how close they came to beating the Bulls. It is going to be tough sledding through the conference this year. As far as players of the week on the women's side, actually plenty of them from the Bulls. But Emily Cavanaugh, the offensive player of the week, deservedly so from Temple. We told you on Friday's show how she scored 2 goals to tie the game within about 3 minutes after Cincinnati looked like it had put the Owls away. And then they ended up winning the game with a late goal. Lucy Roberts, the Bulls, was the defensive player of the week. Goalkeeper honors go to SMU's Tatum Sutherland. 8 saves in helping to shut out East Carolina. And then the rookie of the week is Memphis midfielder Momo Nakeo. She had the winning goal against UCF. On a roll, Mackenzie Bray, senior defensive player for Memphis, along with two Bulls. That's a little teaser. We'll tell you about them tomorrow morning on Bulls Beat. SMU midfielder Lindsey Whitmore, Temple goalie Cameron Stabline also on the honor roll. Finally, volleyball, where after two matches for everybody, you have three 2-0 teams, and one of them, you would have predicted, no doubt, the UCF Knights. They took down Cincinnati and East Carolina, also 2-0. Tulane and SMU. Tulane had to play one match on a neutral court, but finally got to get to home. Of course, Hurricane Ida took the Green Waves athletics programs to various other areas, and man, did they enjoy their time in New Orleans on Sunday, sweeping Tulsa, dominating Tulsa, actually, 25-14, 25-14, 25-17 were the scores. This was a Tulsa team that defeated Houston in five sets on Friday night, and incidentally, Houston bounced back by sweeping Wichita State. So it looks like Tulsa's strong, looks like Tulane's really strong, Houston has been strong. Temple's been pulling off some fine results, but the Owls get beat in four sets. The last two were both close at 25-23 by Memphis on Sunday. It is going to be up in the air. And again, as I talked about on last week's show, it's a little upsetting, disappointing, however you want to put it, that these teams that are going to be fighting through the year, and this is kind of what happened in men's soccer last year. You had a bunch of good teams, but you know, when you have a good group of teams, they're not going to be able to sweep through, with maybe the exception of UCF. You're going to have teams all around and a little bit above for the better ones, 500, but with no conference tournament, those teams are not going to have a good-looking overall record. I'm afraid this might mean that the American Athletic Conference is destined to only get one team in the NCAA tournament this year, unless someone else, again, separates from that pack. We're assuming that UCF will be one, because the Knights are just good. We've been telling you about them. Claudia Dillon was the player of the week on offense last week for UCF. Hit 577 in their two matches. Didn't put up whopping kills totals because, well, they won their two matches in straight sets. Defensively, Kate Georgiadis, sophomore from Houston. We mentioned her name a couple of times. 41 digs in the five-set match against Tulsa. Weekly honor roll, Abby Walker. We saw her against the Bulls with seven kills and five blocks in that match. Two SMU players, Alex Glover, she had a 9 kills, 7 block assist performance in 4 sets against Temple. Rachel Wolf hit 407. Anna Davis of Tulane, sophomore middle, had 16 kills and 5 blocks in the win against Wichita. And Houston's Abby Jackson led the conference in points per set, had 23 kills and 11 digs against Tulsa, 14 kills against Wichita State. So UCF, Tulane, SMU all 2-0, splitting their matches. Houston, Cincinnati, Memphis, Tulsa, and East Carolina, and then Wichita State, the Bulls, and Temple all at 0-2 overall. The only other team besides UCF that is looking like it might have the record to make an NCAA at-large push, you'd have to say Houston at 11-3 and maybe Tulane at 9-5. Again, the rest of these teams, though talented, are right around 500. And this was more than a little interesting. It appears that, and the Houston folks, if you look at their coaches on Twitter, are kind of saying that the conference decided to take their shot put and move it to Wichita for the conference meet, as, sure enough, if you go to the American.org and you go to the championships section, it kind of has them in the order that they'll be taking place this year. I didn't know that softball was going to be at East Carolina. I might go to that. That's a nice little location. But anyway, men's and women's outdoor track and field will be at Cessna Stadium in Wichita. It was originally going to be in Houston. In fact, if you go to Leroy Burrell, the head coach at Houston's Twitter page, he kind of had a time today. He said he was informed by email that the American Athletic Directors and Senior Women Administrators voted to strip the conference meet from Houston. Said, "I can't believe some professionals," he puts that in quote, "would make such a decision. This only hurts student athletes of the host institution, and it is just petty." And he put out an email, and it's got the whole thing. It says, "Be advised that pursuant to the conference bylaws, an institution withdrawing from the league relinquishes its right to host a conference championship unless the site is determined based on regular season competitive performance." So, yeah, the American is saying, essentially, take that, Houston. That'll be a fun one to keep an eye on. That's going to do it for Around the American here on a Monday. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Sharp.